You are listening to episode 93 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, watching CEOs and silicon manufacturers. Speaking of cool apps.
Okay.
I don't know. That was a bad transition, but we'll go with it.
Okay.
Speaking of cool apps that in some ways are really just like one-off side projects, Yahoo has been buying a ton of these types of things.
Yeah.
And their latest one, no, it's not their latest one anymore. One of them recently is, it's Big Noggins, which I'm pretty sure I mispronounced that right now.
It's funny. I thought it was like Big No Gins, but Big Noggins is probably.
I don't know.
Right.
It's a fantasy sports app, essentially. And it's a one-man app. So this one dude has been coding this thing up. His name is Jerry Shen. He's a software engineer, and he worked in the defense industry and then made an iPhone app as a side project, which very quickly became his main project.
Yeah.
Kind of like, that's cool. He and his wife set off on a round-the-world trip in 2011, and he did all of the development for Big Noggins while traveling. And the app eventually became the number one paid sports app on iTunes.
Whoa.
With over a billion downloads. So I can do quick math. Cool. And so what he said is that after many years as a free agent, I'd like to officially announce that Yahoo has picked me up off the waivers. He said, I'm excited to join a team of all-stars to take fantasy sports to the next level. I've been playing Yahoo Fantasy since high school and have wanted to work here since college, so this really is a dream come true for me. So have you ever used Yahoo's fantasy sports
platform? No, I actually haven't.
It's...
Terrible.
How do I want to describe it? It's an example of a platform. This is really hard to describe.
I can tell.
It looks like it was built in 1995.
Yeah.
But with the functionality of something from 2005. Okay, so it does a lot. Like, it's got the Ajax, it's got some of the, you know, advanced query tools and whatnot, but it just looks old. And
yeah.
You're kind of like, really, guys, this is not modern at all. And it's just very heavy graphics, very, and not a Web 2.0. It's like, you know, Web 1.0. Plus the GIFs type thing. But there aren't any GIFs, but it feels like if there were, you'd be like, yeah, that feels about right.
That's awful.
Yeah, it is awful. And it always loaded slow. And there were multiple times when I would do something and I would click like save and I go, oh shoot, I have to do this again. And I'd have to refresh the page and then do whatever changes that I did and then save it again. Which I will admit that doing fantasy sports sounds complicated just because you got all these teams and everyone has their own little team and you have all this, there's just super, super heavy data intensive and, you know, there's a lot going on. They're like a bunch of mini social networks, really.
Right.
With constantly updating information and whatever. It's just a product that it just feels like there's been no resources put towards design and they've got a team that's just running as fast as they can to just keep it up.
Right, right.
To make sure that it has the latest information for the new season. So anyways, this dude, apparently, has a mobile fantasy sports app, which is awesome. And he has now been bought by Yahoo, which is one of the many. So this past week alone, this is one of three. Quickie is the other one. Big Noggin and then... Exomni, it's inbox backwards, and which is not surprisingly an inbox management service. I don't remember what Quickie is. I feel like I used to know what that was. They won some awards. They're cool. But so all that to say, this was like one of three purchases where this one article I said he was read. He was like, "Well, I was going to talk about Yahoo's latest acquisition, but I was a day late, and in that amount of time, it is no longer the latest."
Oh wow, geez.
Yeah, so they've done a ridiculous number of things. It's like they have done, what is it, since Marissa Meyer took over, they have done 17 acquisitions.
Whoa.
17. And then Quickie was the second biggest at $50 million, the first biggest being Tumblr.
Right.
And for like $1 billion. But they've been doing all these small little snap up, they're calling like their combination like acquihires, plus they've already got a mobile app thing going on. And so now, I mean, it's just it's such a like a feverish pace that everyone's going like, "All right, Yahoo, what's your deal? What's your play? Yeah. What are you going for? Clearly you're sticking in the headlines because we love to talk about acquisitions and the amount of money you're throwing around." Oh, and this is the other thing. They were saying that the reason why Yahoo is able to do this is because they are part owners of, what is it? It's Alibaba. Is that how they pronounce them? I probably just killed their name. They are a search company in China or Japan, in Asia. Keep it general. I'm right. And that company is just taking off like gangbusters, and they own like 15% or something, you know, a small portion of it. And so they can do all these stock offers, and like, yeah, she could probably do another 17 if she wanted or more.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. So they're just like, so she's got the money, who cares? But now they're trying to say like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Yahoo's strategy here?
I think the obvious answer is what we talked about. Gosh, it's probably 4 weeks. It was probably 4 weeks ago now, where they're building a platform. They've realized that the real money is in aggregating and understanding what people like and what they're doing. And they've already got a giant platform with a bunch of different things, but they're adding more and more. They're trying to update services. They're trying to update different pieces of the puzzle. It's like Big Noggins, I think, is clearly designed to update and keep pace with, you know, with the NFL and the NBA and all the different, you know, all the different sports franchises that are actually building their own, you know, competitive fantasy sports league. I think Yahoo's trying to keep up with that, and so they're going to try to build a better system, and why not acquihire somebody to do it? And whereas things like Tumblr, I think, is entirely based around the idea of trying to get as much information about the users. And so it's all about updating the services that they do have while incorporating more services, trying to get every person on the internet to be using Yahoo at some point. You know, I think that's the goal, is they just want everybody who uses the internet to be using a Yahoo service, similar to what Google does and what, you know, and what Microsoft is trying to do and what Facebook is trying to do. You know, Facebook is trying to get everybody to use Facebook. Google is trying to have a service for everybody. And Yahoo, I think, is trying to do, you know, unsurprisingly, Mayer's doing what she did at Google, which is try to build services that touch that everybody uses at least one of. And then you can start to build graphs and information about users, and it gives you more power to do more stuff. And that's the most valuable companies in the world, you know, online right now, are companies that basically everybody uses, touches them in some way, and or touched by them, and the data collection that goes with that, the big data mining, you know. And it just, to me, that seems like the strategy. And she's trying to do it in an incredibly accelerated pace, and because she can, you know. And I think the real question is, you know, you've got plates spinning. She had a bunch of plates spinning, slowing down, some of them toppling, and now all of a sudden she's coming in with a bunch of energy and hoping that she, you know, and by buying a bunch of extra plates and a couple of plate spinners, she's hoping to get, you know, to come and balance the load across all of that and get that all moving and up to speed. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if it's, it, I think the real interesting part is going to be to see how many of these survive in any capacity, really, you know, and how many.
Well, see, that's the crazy part is on almost every single one of them, they're like, don't worry, we're maintaining the brand and the app. It's going to stay there.
Yeah. Well, that's not what I mean. I mean, you know, how many of these apps are just going to go the way of GeoCities where, you know, where, yeah, Yahoo left the term GeoCities, but eventually the platform died because everybody stopped using them. It's like, you know, I Big Noggin sounds like a good one that people are going to keep using, but, you know, there's still a big question over Tumblr. How long is Tumblr going to be popular for? How long is, you know, how long are these different services going to be, you know, they're making all these investments and buying these apps, and, you know, unfortunately, apps rise to popularity and just die in a matter of minutes sometimes if something better comes along. And so that, to me, will be the most interesting part about this. That's furthermore, that's what goes back to my idea that they're trying to build a company that everybody touches Yahoo somewhere and doesn't know it. It's sort of like, you know, we talk about this all the time, but, you know, Levi couldn't sell Docker, couldn't sell, you know, nice dress pants. They couldn't sell khaki pants. Right. So they started Dockers. And I think that's why they're keeping all the brands, because they don't care if you're using Yahoo or not. What they care is if they're getting your data. That's the only consistent thing through all of it, is that you're using their servers to do these different activities. And why would they want you to do that unless they just want your personal information so that they can aggregate and sell you ads? You know.
Yeah, and I guess one of the thoughts that I instantly had about all that was like, can you actually manage all of that transition and change? You know, that's a lot going on. But then I thought, again, I'll lean on this because that's my personal experience. You know, at HP Discover, I saw a ton of different products and services that HP is working on. And you were like, I was like, whoa, you know, there's a lot going on here. People are actually working really hard on this stuff. It's not like we just do printers and, you know, we do a ton of other stuff. And even within the printers, there's like 100 different projects going on. And somehow it all coordinates magically. And I wonder if she's like, don't worry, we got the resources. They're all sitting around. They're not doing things that I think are important right now, or a priority, I should say. And she's like, and we can all work together and incorporate this stuff. Because one of the things they were saying is she's probably got like 2 years to make something of this, and then founders will be contractually no longer obliged to hang around.
Right.
And it would be kind of like, all right, either we made something of value or, yeah, that didn't work. And it could just be a buy it all and see what sticks. We got the money. And hopefully we'll get lucky half of them, you know, and they'll actually integrate. Half of them maybe won't, you know, who knows. But yeah, it's just interesting. I don't know where they're headed with all of this, but one of the other arguments that I heard was like, okay, fine. You bought Xomni. It's an inbox management tool. Do you really believe that people are going to be leaving Gmail and Flox to come to Yahoo Mail?
I don't think they need to. I think I come back to, I don't think that's the goal. I don't think, it just doesn't seem like they're going out and buying. I think, you know, Xomni is going to be another one of those updates where they're going to take a inbox management. You're going to see the technology that they've incorporated into that app migrate its way over to Yahoo Mail. And you'll slowly see Yahoo Mail and, you know, I'll bet you see that become an app, like Gmail has an app, and it'll look, you know, uncomfortably like Xomni, you know, and because the dude who built Xomni is going to be building this other app, or the team that built it, you know, my guess would be that, to me, that's more about keeping Yahoo. I would guess that's about keeping Yahoo relevant. And, you know, unlike Tumblr, which is about keeping, you know, about expanding, you know, your market.
Well, yeah. And I can see, we'll run with the email one, just because I think it's interesting, where they turn that, it is email, but they really turn it into like a message center. And, you know, it's like, oh, you got an update on Tumblr? Oh, it's sitting in your Yahoo Mail messages right now.
Right.
Oh, you got a fantasy update? Oh, guess where that's at right now. You know. Oh, and P.S. You can email external people. That's totally fine. But, you know, and I guess that's where I'm kind of hoping is that they start to – they figure out a way where let's say that you're using this big noggin and you're, you know, whatever, doing your thing. And they start to integrate other Yahoo features into it to where – It's just this natural extension, and it totally makes sense. And before you know it, you're using some other Yahoo property like email, which they've improved with Exomni and, you know, other businesses that they bought, and right. or apps, I guess. And you're like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Yeah, I'll use this and to communicate back and forth. And well, yeah, I'll read my news on this, and I'll share it on using this other service that happens. You know, and I'm read news on Sumly, which looked interesting, and now it's integrated with Tumblr to just quickly, you know, share it out there for the world to see, and have my own personal Tumblr, if you will. And hey, cool, it's here. And now I'm following people on Tumblr, and that news shows up on my Yahoo homepage for when I right. visit. In addition to the weather and horoscopes, I can see news from people I've liked a lot. And I don't know. I guess part of what you're hearing is, I have this hope and this desire that it is some crazy strategy where they're like, yeah, we're going to integrate all of this and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, they've got all these hopes and dreams and all these hooks and it'll just be very, very cool. But I also have this feeling that that's just me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I completely agree. I think that would be awesome. I don't think there's any chance that it's going to happen. I think, or not any chance, or I think that's a long-term strategy. You know, I'll bet that's,
right.
you
like
know,
like the Kickstarter, idea. I won it yesterday, and it's actually like 4 years out.
Right, exactly. So, sorry, Charlie.
But well, I hope I'm half right, and I'm right on the good stuff.
I understand. So, what was I going to say? I was going to come up with some clever transition, but I don't have one. I'm just going to jump into it. So I'm Apple, obviously has been a big, you know, company. wow. This has been a great
they
start
have
to
been
this
a
story.
Big company. Yes.
They obviously had a lot of their manufacturing done by Samsung until Samsung started taking all of those plants and building their own phones based on them. And they,
well, you know, that happens.
You know, it's, hey man, it's Asia. And Apple has had this problem of Samsung's been one of the biggest manufacturing companies in the world, you know, and really is one of the few companies that's been able to keep pace with the level of Apple product manufacturing that's been going on, you know, in conjunction with companies like Pegatron and Foxconn. But Samsung has been doing a lot of the chip manufacturing for Apple for the past couple of years, specifically for the iPhone.
Right.
And all of your A6 and A5s and everything. And at the same time, it's like everybody's been going, you know, your direct competitor in the phone market is Samsung. And yet they're a fundamental part of the supply chain for the iPhone. Isn't there,
right, which wasn't a big deal until like a year or two ago. You know,
right.
One of many.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though they were a direct competitor, they weren't leading. And then furthermore, really and truly, although the money all, you know, funnels up to the same CEOs, the hardware chip division is a completely different division than the consumer product division. I mean, there's basically no shared management. So there's, you know, there wasn't a big conflict of interest, and it actually wasn't until Apple started suing them that it sort of became a, okay, we can't be friends anymore. Like, this is, you know, that's when the divorce got ugly. And,
right.
and it became a problem. So the big, and there was they were buying a ton of stuff from Samsung that was going into the iPhone, like screens and things of that nature. And they've been slowly moving all of those different components to other manufacturers like Sharp and LG and stuff. But they finally made the big jump, the tough one, the one that people weren't really sure if they were going to be able to move away from, which was the heart of the whole iPhone, the system on a chip, the A6 or A7 or whatever the next couple are going to be called. They've now signed a contract with the TSMC, which is the Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corp. TSMC is a huge fab company. They work with Qualcomm. They work with NVIDIA. And are the two big ones that design chips, and then TMC does all the actual manufacturing on the fabrication of the wafers and the chips and everything. So which is kind of interesting, and worthy of note that big transition is happening, but there's a lot of concern that goes with it, because although TSMC is one of the biggest semiconductor manufacturers in the world, they don't have the greatest track record of delivery dates. they've been
interesting.
NVIDIA, obviously, like I said, NVIDIA has been working with them for quite a few years, and at some point it just became like this running a sad joke, where NVIDIA would basically have their earnings call, and the CEO of their earnings call or CEO would get on and say, yeah, so these are all the different things we're doing, and we're not really able to ship as many chips as we want because TSMC isn't hitting the numbers and deadlines like they're supposed to. And it was just quarter after quarter they would come up and TSMC isn't hitting hitting the marks that they're supposed to. And it actually got to the point where at some point NVIDIA publicly slammed them at the International Trade Partners Conference, which was a huge deal because it's everybody's there, and they basically were these guys are awful to work with. The problem is that they've got these giant contracts written with them, and everybody's building so many chips that it's actually remarkably hard to find companies that can do scale you want them to. So NVIDIA hates TSMC right now. They're totally don't get along, and NVIDIA still gets all of their manufacturing done there. And Qualcomm doesn't have quite the same outwardly negative view of TSMC, but they are constantly reporting that they're having constraints and not getting enough chips built. So it's just been this, So it's been this big problem that this company, despite its size, just has a hard time of hitting its numbers.
And NVIDIA isn't just some small no-name company who has no power.
Yeah, no, they're gigantic, especially in the mobile telecoms world. I think what you'll see, actually, you'll probably see is NVIDIA move over to Samsung to get manufacturing done of their chips. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Apple is planning to do what they did with LG and Sharp, which is essentially save the company so that they can continue to manufacture screens. Was it Philips that was on there that was crashing? There was a LCD panel company. I think it's Philips. That was they were basically about to go under, and all of a sudden they got this huge cash injection from unknown investors to allow them to survive. And then a day later, Apple was like, "Oh, it's cool that you're going to survive. Want to make our screens for us?" and signed a giant contract with Apple. And I have a feeling that what you're going to see is you're going to see Apple due to TSMC, what they did to Foxconn, which is they're going to become their biggest company customer overnight. And you're going to see Qualcomm and NVIDIA get pushed even further onto the back burners of, you know, of importance. You'll see, I'll bet you'll see expansions of TSMC as they suddenly have all this money to build new, you know, new fabs. And with any kind of luck, they'll need somebody to make six inch horizontal furnaces for processing wafers. Fingers crossed. as that affects me directly. You know, I think this is an interesting move. A lot of people are very cautious about letting Apple or having Apple do that, because it's like, you know, as much as a headache it was to have you be all wound up with Samsung, you know, mm-hmm. not being able to hit deadlines because your manufacturing companies, they talk about the fact that they buy like half of the world's supply of aluminum ahead of time, so they have enough aluminum for their computers. Just because they can and they want to have enough. And so I find it hard to believe that, especially a dude like Tim Cook, where this is his expertise, his supply chain management, would get into bed with a company without having a plan to be able to keep up product. And the other thing is that they have like 2 years before they have to really worry about it, because they have two more years on their contract with Samsung. So the next two generations of iPhones are going to be still built, you know, primarily chips are going to be coming out of the Samsung factory. So it'll be interesting to watch this over time, I think. The other big thing about this is that, you know, there was still a lot of chatter about Apple moving over to Intel to have Intel do fabrications. And Intel's big hang up was they wanted Apple to use some sort of core Intel technology in order to use their foundries. I think that ended up being a sticking point for the two companies, because it sounds like Intel doesn't get the Apple manufacturing business, which is, you know, whatever, it is what it is, man.
I understand Intel's position on that. Hey, you can use us, but you got to use some of this other stuff, because that's where their margins probably are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, foundries
are,
make sense for them.
Yeah, foundries are a tough game, and you know, the reality there. I mean, there's not money in it like there used to be, and yet there's oodle, especially for Intel, because I know how much money they spend on their systems, and they spend a lot more than anybody else in the world, and you know, they make gigantic capital investments that take years and years and years to, you know, get systems built. So it's, they don't make their money because of their foundry, and they'd be really expensive chips actually if that was all they were doing. But it's because they can sell the final product, and it uses all their core technology at incredibly inflated prices, that allows them to afford the extravagant fabs that they have. And it's funny just learning more and more about Intel and how they go about manufacturing their machines. It becomes obvious why they just can't afford to not have their transistor designs in part of the wafers that they're manufacturing. Just not, like you said, not enough money in it.
Total side thought here, but my wife recently took on a new job.
Yeah.
And it requires her to use her computer a lot more, you know, for like actual work stuff, not just pleasure, entertainment. And it's kind of awesome, because she had the last generation MacBook before they just stopped making them. And it was like, you know, the the $999 version of it. So, you know, not a whole lot of upgrades, just the basic. And it was struggling to just run like Word.
Right.
And iPhoto. And so and the way that she described it is that it could do, she could run two programs at once, and it would be, she could tolerate it. Yeah. The second she opened up the third one, it was done. An act of frustration. And so I was like, okay, ding, 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 that equals RAM.
Right.
And so I started doing research, and, you know, unlike chips, RAM is just one of those, there is no brand associated with it. It just kind of, you buy one and cross your fingers.
Right.
Kind of. And you never really know what's on it and who it is coming from. And, you know, that's one of Intel's deal, right? It's like Intel inside. It's branded as Intel. You know it's Intel. You know what you're getting. So all I have to say, she had 2 gigs of memory in it. And according to Apple, you could go up to 4 gigs of memory. Well, I found one that went up to like 16. And I know. I didn't get the 16. I got the 8.
Nice.
It solved the problem.
Yeah, that'll do it, man.
It still opens apps slow, which I was like, which I knew, right? I was like, that is going to take as long as it takes.
Yeah, that's because it's a hard drive. You need a hard drive upgrade.
Yeah, she's got the hard drive and just the chip that's running it all is still whatever speed that is.
Yeah.
And so it takes a while for apps to open up, but while that one's opening, she can jump around and do other stuff, and it can handle it all flawlessly now. So it nice. Transformed her job overnight, which was cool.
It is, it is interesting.
Just one more, and then I'll let you go. When we bought these computers, one of the things I remember saying this, and we finally did it. I said, "Well, we'll buy the low end on, you know, on that particular thing." And they'll work fine. And then I said, and then what'll happen in 2 to 3 years when they're getting slow and sluggish, we'll give them what I would call a midlife kicker, where we'll upgrade, say, the RAM or, you know, whatever makes sense. And all of a sudden it'll speed up again and enough where we can get it, we can survive for another 2-3 years before, okay, now it's time to redo the entire thing.
Yeah.
And, which is exactly what happened with hers. Mine is still fine. It hasn't hit that point yet where I'm like, okay. But I think I'm rocking like 4 gigs of RAM in mine, which is still enough to do everything I want. But anyways.
No, it's sort of an interesting, relatable that, you know, it's Intel is one of the unique pieces in silicon manufacturers out there that you really know where it's made and what technology is in it. Whereas, you know, with your RAM,
which was their whole thing, right? Is they came out and said everyone else was just some non-specific OEM part. And no. We want to brand ours. We want people to know that it's us, which then led to AMD doing the same thing. Cause people are like, well, what's inside? And they're like, oh, well, it's AMD.
Right.
Or, you know, it's a something else, a Qualcomm chip. And, you know, and so they were the ones who, like, because they were like, if we can get a brand, we can charge a premium because people will trust us and they'll know that it's awesome. And because we're going to make a superior product was kind of their deal. Makes sense. Yeah, because mine, it was like, once I figured out the type that I wanted, I was searching on, like, Amazon and Newegg, and where did I eventually buy it from? It was like OWC or something. But there were like 4 or 5 places. And honestly, I was like, I actually don't know if this is good or not good. And I'm not even 100% sure if this is the right one.
Right. Yeah.
Which I ended up going with this one because it was the only one that matched Apple's like recommended stats perfectly.
Mm.
And I went, okay. Other than the fact that Apple said it can go up to 4 and they obviously had bigger,
right.
They were like, no worries. Totally tested. Okay. But it had like, all the other like stats, you know, the number of pins and speeds and blah, blahs.
Yeah,
you know,
number of pins is a big one. You want to make sure you match that.
Which I thought was interesting because Apple had like, it was a 22-pin deal, and all the other ones, except for this one, were all 20 pins.
Huh.
So, like, I feel like those last two are important.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe they count differently. I don't know.
They count differently. They start at number. They start at 3.
Dude, who knows? It was weird. And so I ended up, like I said, they were all 200 and this one was like a 204.
Mm.
Some random number. But anyways, Yeah, it was just, it was like this major, like, I guess I buy it and cross my fingers that it doesn't break
right.
the computer or something. I don't know. You know, and so that's, you know, that's what Intel banks upon is I go, oh, it's Intel. I know it'll work. It'll be fine. It's designed for this. Cool. And I pay a premium for that peace of mind.
Right. Right, right. Yeah. So it'll be, it's interesting now that, yeah, Apple's doing the same thing with branding their silicon.
But. Which obviously their whole thing, I mean, they've got pretty strict quality standards on what's good and what's not. And, you know, if it's not good, they're like, no, it doesn't count. Sorry. And I feel like they'll be pretty heavily involved with TSMC to make sure that it hits the quality standards that they're looking for.
Right.
Where are they located? Do you know that?
Taiwan.
Oh, all right.
The Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation, so.
I don't know that. All right.
Yeah, Taiwan. Yeah. So, speaking of transistors, if you don't mind me jumping on this story real quick. We talk about this every once in a while, and I refer to this idea of your phases of technology, and everybody in the industry that I give these, you know, what the next four steps are, they all completely agree with me.
Well, I disagree.
Okay, that's perfect. We're on silicon. We're on 2D silicon right now. Everything's manufactured in layers, but really and truly, there's like one layer of everything. We're going to move to your 3D, which is the idea that, you know, really and truly, you'll lay things out and they'll be able to go up, and it'll allow you to stack transistors way closer together, build blocks of silicon, should be a lot faster. But that's the next stage of fabrication development. The phase the phase after that is going to be another material, like as you're doping. So
like
instead of silicon, we'll go with germanium or carbon or whatever, and they'll make them out of diamonds or graphene, something to that effect. And that's going to have a couple year shelf life, but you'll be able to make these really, really, you'll be able to pull really a vast amount of current through the wafer because it's going to be made out of material that can survive higher temperatures. The problem with that is that they'll be high energy consumers. So you won't necessarily see that take place, you know, in mobile devices because they'll still be very high energy. Well, they'll be incredibly high energy consumption, but you'll see those start to, you know, take place in your bigger computers that are actually plugged into the walls and stuff. After that, though, the next big one, and depending on how this technology goes, you might see it sooner than later. I've always said it's going to be optical transistors, and transistors that are turned on and off by
light.
Yeah. And, so the reason why that's a big deal is because it instead of using electricity, which has a huge amount of resistance and requires a lot of power to pull through the transistor, light goes A, at the speed of light, and B, it has barely any resistance. So the power consumption is way lower. And the reality of it is that pulling electricity through a chip travels at about half the speed of light. So just from that perspective alone, these things are going to be way faster because you'll be able to
it'll be twice as fast.
Yeah, basically.
It's cool.
Yeah, and so what's that's not necessarily true. That's an unfair comparison because the propagation of the electrical force is nearly the speed of light. It actually no, that's not true. I was just reading about this weekend. I was on the plane, so I was really tired. But it's the electron moves really slow. Ideal propagation is like in a vacuum under, you know, good temperatures, you can get it to move at like 90% of the speed of light. But the real propagation of electricity under normal circumstances is about half the speed. So this would be a pretty big breakthrough if it could ever happen. Well, good news. The rest of America was taken off the 4th of July, but MIT wasn't.
Good job, MIT.
Yeah, it was the only news that popped up on Thursday. MIT news. Researchers build an all-optical
transistor.
Take
a vacation, jeez.
I know, seriously. You guys are so smart, but you don't know how to relax.
Just can't wait.
So
yeah, they're not street smart.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a big deal. This is the first time that this has really been demonstrated in a real, like, practical way, where it's not it. There's no transition, because usually, like, optical transistors, the idea that everybody's like talked about has been like, you know, you build a thing that creates a current, and the current creates a another pulse of light, and that's the best that we've come up with for optical transistors at this point. But these dudes, they came up with a better way of doing it, or an actual way of doing it. And so let's see, the heart of the switch. So essentially the transistor works as a switch controlled by the whatever it's controlling is controlled by the same sort of thing, which means that you can stack them together. So the heart of the switch is a pair of highly reflective mirrors. When the switch is on, an optical signal, a beam of light, can pass through both mirrors. When the switch is off, only about 20% of the light in the signal can get through, which is effectively an off. The paired mirrors constitute what's known as an optical resonator. If you had just one mirror, all light would come back. The Lester Wolf professor of physics at MIT, who led the new work. When you have two mirrors, something very strange happens. Light can be thought of as a particle, photons, but it can also be thought of as a wave, an electromagnetic field. And even though on the particle description, photons are stopped by the first mirror, on the wave description, the electromagnetic field laps into the space between the mirrors. If the distance between the mirrors is precisely calibrated to the wavelength of the light, basically a very large field builds up inside the cavity that cancels the field coming back and goes in the forward direction. In other words, the mirrors become transparent to light at the right wavelength, which is weird. And then if you fill the mirror with a gas of supercooled cesium atoms, ordinarily these atoms don't interfere with the light passing through them, but if a single gate photon is fired in the midst of at a different angle, kicking just one electron of one atom into a higher energy state, it changes the physics of the cavity enough that light can no longer pass through it. So essentially they put, it actually almost makes sense to me in a physics ways. But basically what they do is they build this resonator thing that will allow light to pass through it in the weird way that physics, you know, that light can do that sometimes. And by having it all be the right wavelength and everything. And then they put something in there that can block it if one photon hits it. And it's just like, yeah, that's kind of – it's pretty similar to how a transistor works. And so what's exciting –
that's the word.
Yeah, so it's exactly – so, you know, obviously this is one of those things where, like, this is not perfect in – you're not going to start building transistors right away. This is, like, right. The early single-point germanium transistors that were, like huge, were, like, really right. Big. And yeah. It's basically a proof of concept. But what he says is really cool about this is that now that they've actually done it, now that they figured out how to do it to some level, now there's no – you know, especially the super cool part. That's difficult. But what they were saying is that there's no real physics that says you can't build a actual structure, a crystalline structure that can't do the same thing once you understand how to do it. And so what they were saying was basically –
matter scale.
Yeah. What they're basically saying is if you can build the crystal, you can take a sheet of silicon, which is really exciting because we already know how to process silicon really well. So
we do.
Anytime we can leverage that, manufacturing base, the better. They said basically you just dope it with different chemicals, and if you can seed it with the right crystal, you could build crystals that would replace the supercooled cesium atoms, and that where if you you know where they'll be invisible to light passing through it unless you hit it with a single photon, at which point the particles jumping through different energy states will start to mess stuff up, and bada bing bada boom, quantum effects, and light can't pass through anymore. And then all of a sudden what you can do is you can build a couple of really cool things. Number one, you can build an all-light processor, which would be huge because they'd be way lower energy capacity. And because they work on traditional transistor logic, converting, you know, a computer, a traditional computer, or a program that runs on a traditional computer to a traditional piece of silicon to a program that would run on this would be pretty easy because it'd be the same logic. It's like it would just run the same way. You know, building the interface to build them into traditional components would be more difficult. But there's no real engineering or physics problem with the idea of, you know, saying, no, we're just going to build computers that use light instead of, you know, to do all the processing. But the other really exciting part about this, and probably where it will get incorporated first, is in all of our fiber optic routers. Because right now what we do is we fire off of, you know, a photon through a fiber optic cable. It travels at the speed of light, nearly the speed of light, to get to the next router. And at the next router, we read it, we turn in electricity, we process it, and then we shoot it off onto the next leg of the router. And so the bottleneck for the router universe is
the translation,
the actual routers, and turning it into electrical signals. That's where we get the major slowdown in computation. So, you know, everybody, the goal on this will probably first be to build gates or, you know, routers that use light so that you can send signals from one side of the world to the other without it ever having to translate back to electricity.
That's cool.
Yeah, which is pretty dang exciting. And the nice part about that is size won't be as important because that's going to be microfine.
Right.
These are going to be difficult at first. Whereas if you build bigger routers, but they're super fast, that's pretty awesome. It'll work just fine. And they use like low energy consumption. And then you'll start to see this moving into the realm of trying to put it into computers and stuff. And once you have optical transistors, then the idea of being able to build quantum computers becomes that much easier. It's long been known. We've built, you know, single bit, quantum bit, quantum computers. And then, that one company, I can't remember what they're called. They're building, Google just bought one of their quantum computers. They're kind of like faux quantum computers. They work like quantum computers and they work pretty well, but it's long been known that if you really want to build a quantum computer, you're going to need light transistors. It's just, they go hand in hand. And so the idea of, and this is that fourth stage of processing, which will really move us into quantum computing. You know, none of this is going to kill silicon completely. Silicon will always have a place in our world. These will actually be smaller and smaller parts of the computer industry, really and truly, because they're more, although they're way more powerful, they're more and more niche. Whereas silicon is so abundant and so cheap to manufacture that, you know, your universe of things where everything has a computer chip in it and probably a system on a chip, that will almost definitely be made of a silicon because those will be really low power consumption and stuff, and they'll be crazy cheap to make. Whereas your main computer hubs, like the computer you have on your desktop, that'll have a light processor on it because it'll be more expensive. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's really exciting though. They actually did it. It's just, yeah. So
that is cool.
You know, physics never said we couldn't, but actually doing it is a whole different, you know, level of exciting. So,
right.
Yay. I'm excited.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.